Welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show with Nancy Hopkins and Walt Silva, produced by Colleen Kelly of Haggy Shack Radio, simulcasted over Cosmic Reality Radio. And welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. This is Nancy Hopkins. It is December 18th, 2018. With me is Walt Silva. And how you doing today, Walt? Are we good?
Hello, Nancy. Hello, listeners. Thank you for being back with us. Another exciting Tuesday. Yay.
Walt, are you supposed
to... Pre-Christmas.
Walter, you're supposed to promote us and act like, you know, these people are the luckiest people in the world. They get to hear us again. Instead, you're like, oh, yeah, well, okay, here we are. What are we going to do?
I'm trying to play it cool.
You're not doing a good job of it.
Well, that's why you're in producing and I'm not.
So you're buggers about the Christmas holiday thingy?
What I don't celebrate Christmas.
No, I was just actually thinking about it, and I was realizing that, well, 7 days is Christmas next Wednesday. When the heck is it?
Well, today's the 18th, so
it's next Tuesday. It's next Tuesday.
So there's no Christmas show then.
Oh, heavenly day! No.
Because everybody's out there enjoying themselves with all the family that they love to see and hear and get together with, right?
Well, you know, I actually feel bad when I don't have a show on holidays, because there are people out there that, you know, they've got nobody. And if it wasn't for my next-door neighbor, Sandy, you know, I don't have anybody around here that would say, hey, come over and have some food. Well, Cindy would, but we go to Sandy's together. And she cooks. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. Because I honestly hadn't realized it until today that, wow. This is really happening. We're going to end this year. You know?
Thank God.
Oh, no. I think it's been an amazing year. We've got a lot of things accomplished. I mean, first off, the awakening of the people is exponentially getting, taking bigger leaps. The president has come forth and accomplished some tremendous things, even though mainstream media doesn't like people to know it.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
You'll hear the Fulford, unless you had a chance to read it.
No, I didn't read it, and I want to read it, and because did you ever see any of the YouTubes regarding this, whatever they got in their programs?
What do you mean, YouTube's about whatever they have?
Because you know, they went to the Bush Memorial. Well, what happened was, I guess they were in the rotunda. And to me, the first time I saw the video, it was a close-up of Jeb Bush. And I didn't realize that he was just standing above his sister-in-law. She's really short compared to him. He was a governor of this state, and I never thought of him as being particularly tall. But anyway, he had this shocked look at whatever she had showed him. So everybody was focused on the paper that Laura Bush got, right? That she showed apparently George and, you know, the brother Jeb. But then they started discussing the fact that Clinton got something fell out of her program. When she was sitting there and they sit down and she opens the program.
Oh, so that's what Fulford is referring to, that they got served papers?
Well, I let me tell the story and then we'll see what Ben says, okay? Because the story got got crazier and crazier. Because, okay, when I saw, again, I saw a piece of, because the camera was basically looking in this one direction, you know. And I saw her look at it. She kind of opened it up, but she didn't seem to react. I did not see an amazing reaction in her. She just sort of like put it away. But then somebody pointed out what happened on the other side of her, to the left of her, where Jimmy Carter was sitting. And he sees her get this piece of paper or this envelope out of the program. And you can see him leafing through his to see if he's got one. Like, well, damn, I didn't get one, right? Okay, so that's that point. Then somebody else took it further, and they found that Joe Biden had also gotten the envelope. And wow. He was sitting behind Clinton. And you can virtually see him going, like, what's this all about to her? She's turned around looking at him. And you can see him going, like, what's this all about? You know, like, what do you know about this? So
he's
again,
doing a double take?
Yeah. Yeah. And George Bush, President Bush, he got very stoic and seemed to be, because I actually saw this, this YouTube on the body language. And they were analyzing the body language of each of these people that seemed to get some news at the, you know, the celebration of George Sr.'s life there in the rotunda. So let's go to Ben and see what Ben thinks all this is, because it's one of the more fascinating stories out there right now. What was in those envelopes?
Okay, so the title of the report, which is dated yesterday, is a secret head of world finance, Cardinal Pell, fired and big changes coming. Last week, Cardinal George Pell was found guilty of sexually abusing children by an Australian court and was subsequently fired by Pope Francis because he was elderly. And there's a link to that. This is huge news in the secret world of finance because Pell was the person in charge of financial matters at the Vatican, and thus was a secret controller for most world government leaders, P2 Freemason and CIA sources say. This is because when most world rulers take power, they get a visit from an official of the Vatican Bank who hands them a bank book with an astronomical number written in it, $1 billion or more for big countries, less for smaller countries. Then they are told, welcome to the world of the rich, and are gently reminded that if they refuse to accept the money, they will be, in quotes, removed. This is the choice of silver or lead that has allowed the Vatican P2 Freemason Lodge, run by descendants of the Caesars, to secretly rule most world governments. The 200 leaders who last week affirmed the fraudulent carbon causes global warming agreement are all slaves of this system. P2 Freemason and CIA sources agree. Thus, the removal of the head of this secret control system will have huge repercussions for world finance and politics, depending on who is selected to replace him and also depending on whether or not this secret system will be allowed to continue. On that front, another huge news items. And then in parentheses, he cautions, still not fully confirmed because it only comes from one royal family source, close parentheses, is that a new head of the Committee of 300, the secret government of the 13 ruling bloodline families, will take power next year. This means Queen Elizabeth will be handing the committee reins to a younger person, hint, not Charles and not William. With this caveat in mind, that is, only one source, here comes some experts from a statement by the soon-to-be-appointed new committee head. And then it begins in quotes. The 13 ruling bloodlines and I have had enough of this world and dominions charged with its curation. All sovereign heads of state and all respected governments fired. And then there's Latin words that say ordo, ab caelo, and there's a link to that. Ordo ab chao is Latin for order out of chaos or order from disorder. This term was invented by Freemasons and is the actual motto of the 33rd degree of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. The source also said, in quotes, Sir Alexander Younger at MI6 is already briefed, along with the Queen in London and the Emperor in Tokyo, about this development. The statement further read that, in quotes, the Habsburg dynasty and spin-offs, most criminally psychopathic, have a lot to answer for in the many hundreds of years of genocide and population reduction come hell or high water. Omnicide is a crime against both humanity itself and all other living ecosystems. Close quotes. The Habsburgs, by the way, claim to be the descendants of the Caesars and are thus part of the family dynasty that controls the P2 Freemasons, the Vatican, and so many and so-called war leaders, P2 sources say. The statement further reads that, in quotes, the 13 ruling bloodlines need to switch to bigger army diplomacy to clear out the rot. A bully is a bully, big or small, so we can all live in peace and quiet and take back the past, present, and more importantly, the future that belongs to us all. Close quotes. The source also said that it was the Committee of 300 that was backing the new quantum financial system, which Pentagon sources independently have long been telling us is set to replace the current system. Here's the source's description of the new system. In quotes, the quantum system, recursive complexity-based central banking to replace stochastic equilibrium or manual rate setting, covert stealth state capture is a complex subject, but essentially it requires quantum computing to analyze the state and outcome of each domestic economy in isolation and in symphony, and then to moderate the supply and demand of currency, which will all be electronic. The source also says that this system would be able to help finance and plan a massive campaign to stop environmental destruction and end poverty. However, until we actually see such a system be publicly announced, and until we see a huge campaign to save the Earth, we need to keep up the pressure on the global elite. It is interesting to note in this context that the Black Sun-worshipping P2 Freemasons are seeking to remain in power by cashing a 500 dodecalion U.S. dollar bond. A photo of it can be seen here. And you got to click on this link because you'll never believe that so many zeros could exist in real life. I'm putting it here on the radio chat for those that don't have the report. And that's printed material. That somebody could print that many zeros? It just boggles the mind. Okay. Continuing, they want to cash it in order to finance an escape from this planet that they have been destroying. Instead, they will be facing long-postponed justice, according to Pentagon sources. The Pentagon sources said that, here's where they'll come to the part that we were talking about, the government. The Pentagon sources that in preparation for the military tribunals in January of 2019, White House Chief of Staff General John Kelly is leaving to focus on the pain phase while still having the ear of President Donald Trump as a senior advisor. Those who still think this is all talk and no action are not paying attention to events already happening in the real world. The funeral of George Bush Sr., for example, provided somebody with a chance to serve senior members of the Bush-Clinton faction with legal notices, as can be seen in the videos at the links below. So I take it these two links are the videos you were referring to?
Oh, well, there's probably hundreds of them out there now. But yeah, I'll have to look at those. I didn't see
them. He provides these two. So, obviously, at least one of these must be akin to the ones you've seen. CIA sources are saying that these legal notices were related to 9/11 and other crimes by this cabal faction. Also, in case you missed it, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York has agreed to convene a grand jury to look into the criminal destruction of the World Trade Center buildings on September 11, 2001. We also saw testimony at the Oversight and Government Reform Committee of the U.S. Congress last week that made it abundantly clear the Clinton Foundation was a giant criminal enterprise that exchanged government favors for bribes. While the aware part of the public has known this for a long time, when it becomes formal testimony on the record of Congress, you can be sure that legal action is not far behind. Pentagon sources are also now saying the arrest of Huawei's chief financial officer is a warning sign that executives of Western corporations like Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank who commit fraud or crimes may also face Interpol red notices and prison. Then there is an ongoing roundup of Israeli arms, drugs, and sex traffickers in Latin America, Africa, and elsewhere. Hazarian mafia leaders who are still clinging to power remain under intense attack. Rothschild slave president Emmanuel Macron besieged government, reported last weekend to shutting down the Paris subway network and engineering a massive rainfall to handicap anti-government protests. However, protest leaders vowed they would be back in January after a Christmas break. Pentagon sources add that Macron's days are numbered, as French generals accuse him of treason for signing the UN Pact on Migration. Also, we are now seeing reports that Fethullah Gulen, the probable head of the Sabbatean Mafia, is to be extradited to Turkey. Putting Gulen on trial would reveal all sorts of dirty secrets, including likely testimony about the Zionist plot to start World War III. The criminal regime in Saudi Arabia is also under heavy attack. The U.S. Senate passed a resolution condemning Saudi leader Mohammed bin Salman as guilty in the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Then funding for Arabia's war against Yemen was cut off. Finally, the U.S. and Iran, through proxies, forced Saudi Arabia to accept a ceasefire in Yemen and thus hand over the de facto control of that country to Iranian proxies. Also, Russia has forced the rogue regime in Israel to stop its attacks on Syria by threatening retaliation. This means the rogue state of, this is the play on words that he does, Saudi Israelia, is finally being forced to stop its perpetual warmongering. Also, speaking about warmongering, the Chinese have started negotiations with Pakistan and Afghanistan to end the perpetual war in that region, as the U.S. has lost all credibility there. Another serious issue for the Hazarian mob is that their habit of remote controlling and crashing airliners is blowing up in their faces. A CIA source in Indonesia said the recent Lion Air crash there is going to morph into something big. The owner of Lion Air, Mr. Rusdi Kirana, knows what really happened. He's very careful with his words. Boeing Company for sure knows that flight JT610 was remotely hijacked. The release of the truth will bring the airline industry to its knees. The Zionist cabal cannot allow the truth to come out. The good news is that the truth will be released and the Zionist cabal and their agents will be snatched up. Finally, this is the last paragraph. Finally, last week, Ireland experienced what may have been the first shot fired in an armed rebellion against the banks. A mob attacked armed bank guards who had evicted a family from a house they had been living in for three generations. Eight vehicles were torched and the bank guards, who were attacked with baseball bats, were told never to come back. That thing in Ireland, I've been looking at articles about it. It's just absolutely horrible. What they're doing to people is like half or more of the population of Ireland is in the streets. The banks keep stealing. I'm going to say the correct word, stealing people's houses with their manipulations. And the courts are going along with it. Anyway, that's all she wrote, ladies and gentlemen.
I've not heard a thing about it.
Oh, yeah.
I should pay more attention to mainstream media, right?
Well, I've been reading it on Facebook because remember Alan James from the radio, Open Your Mind Radio?
Yes.
He's the one who's been posting these articles. So if it weren't for his post, I wouldn't be aware that this is happening in Ireland.
Now, is it associated with the yellow vests?
No, that's in France.
Well, actually, it's worldwide. It's also in Israel. And I do believe it was mainstream media was on. I was waiting for the football game or something. And they started talking about Israel has now banned the sale of the yellow vests because they don't want yellow vests cropping up in their streets. Isn't that insane?
Well, that's a good chance for the t-shirt makers to sell yellow t-shirts.
Well, this is the Occupy movement in the next phase. You know, this is people going to...
not Wall Street anymore, it's the entire world.
Well, actually, it was the entire world at that time, too, but we weren't being told that. I knew about it. It wasn't as massive as, I mean, this is the other way around. But see, it's interesting because, one of the things that the French are peeved about is this minister, that prime minister, actually signed a document, okay, with the UN document that was signed by a whole bunch of other people. And what they're saying in this is that it's a UN document, and they are guaranteeing that it's a human right to immigrate anywhere in the world that they want to. And that anybody who talks against this particular law are going to be prosecuted as on hate speech. So... the only reason I know about this document is because of what I'm hearing on mainstream media. I think I don't know because I've been looking at quite a bit of it, but the basic bottom line here is that the people of France do not want this immigration thing to continue because it's obviously so detrimental to the countries they're going through it. And
well, imagine. That's like, you can see the hands, you know, pulling the strings of the puppets. Who would be behind something like this? The same kind of people that are behind, what is it, the $10,000 march, the immigrants coming to the U.S. border through Mexico?
Well, see, that's why it happened, because they had done this in Europe, and it was incredibly successful. The vast majority of the immigrants were actually young men, who then got a lot of benefits but kept demanding more to the detriment of the populations, all of the European countries that were involved in it, which was all of them, I think. So now you have different countries that are confronting crime rates that they've never even seen before. It was a complete attack. It was an attack. It was an attack by forces that were... Well, Katie Hopkins, who's a British commentator, she got to it real fast. She said, these people, if they were coming to Great Britain, if they were coming to Great Britain in order to participate in a better form of life, why are they going into enclaves and taking over entire cities? You know, she claims that the Islamic mayor of London is running an Islamic state. She actually doesn't even consider it part of Britain anymore. But what happened was that they did this, and it was very successful. You just get the governments to all agree to let this happen, you know. And then to anybody that talks against it, well, you're a hate monger. You're all this BS. So here you have the same thing attempted in the United States. Only you don't have one of the players there. You don't have Donald Trump saying, oh, yeah, come right in. Yeah. You don't have Hillary Clinton, who would have been mouthing, oh, yes, I've signed the treaty with the UN, and we're going to... It's a human right thing. You don't have somebody that's playing that game. You have somebody that said, no, you can't come in. And then he put some troops on the border, and the crowd, a few of them, threw rocks and stuff at him. So they threw tear gas back, and end of story.
Is it a new generation of bio warfare? Instead of using exploding bombs, let's use human bombs. They're just bodies, right? They're not people. God.
but my point here is that, this was so funny. Donald Trump was meeting with Pelosi and the minority, Schumer, I think he is, of the House. And they get to the Oval Office, and Mr. President says, oh, by the way, we got cameras on. So they have to sit down in front of the cameras. And, of course, the president is sitting there looking directly into the camera, looking very, you know, virile and big and powerful, and here you got the other two sitting on the couches so that you're looking at the sides of them, and they look diminutive compared to him. And he proceeds to outline why he wants to have a wall, because the wall is, in most cases, 99% a success, in that's how many people don't go through there. There's now a wall. Makes sense. And I don't really understand what the Democrats have against it, except the money. But, you know, let's just build the wall and shut up about it, you know. But anyway, but he was so rude to these people. You know, I did tape it. I taped it, but I'm not exactly. I can't. He would have fallen. I mean, all the people have heard him say this, you know, that hate him. Oh, my God, this was just, you know, fuel to the fire, that one was, because he kept saying to them, and this is what he gets frustrated. I get frustrated with it, right? Because here's the story, okay? He says to Pelosi, look, we could have gotten the okay on the wall from the House, but the Senate wouldn't have passed it. So why are we going to bother doing that? Oh, and she'd go into, and he'd go, no, wait a minute, you don't understand. Without the Senate, why go into it, you know? And he kept going back to the same thing, and he was being basically rude. But she also was like, kept going back to these different ways of addressing the same thing, which is, no, what he's saying to you is he's not going to run around and play politics. He's going to govern the nation. You know, and it was in many ways brilliant, but he was being a bit rude. I mean,
this campaign to dig up any mud on him for whatever reason, it's just not, he's not playing that game either, because I saw a video clip where they thought it was newsworthy that this old lawyer that he used to have when he was back in New York has now been caught red-handed with his hands in the till. He's involved in some kind of scam or embezzlement or something, and the lawyer just got arrested. So they're trying, instead of whatever, I guess this man is not that big or that important. The angle to the story is that this man used to be Trump's lawyer when Trump was in New York. So they're trying to make it about the president, you know, even though the man is not working for Trump anymore. So at one point in the article, it seemed Trump is actually standing outside the White House, and it seems that they're asking him questions about this lawyer. And he didn't bat an eye. He says, yeah, the problem with the man is that he's not very smart. And he's also weak. He's a weak person. But that's it. That's all he had to say about it. So that's why he's now arrested, and he got caught, you know, with his pants down, because he was very, very grounded, very common sense. You know, he's weak and he's not very smart. So there you have it.
Yeah, it's there are a lot of things that are happening, and it's like the number of pedophilia cases that have been brought up under the president. is enormous. The figures are just ridiculous. I mean, thousands in his on his watch, whereas you got, you know, a few thousand. He's got tens of thousands. So,
well, it just goes to show you that it used to be a culture. It used to be a fact of life. Nobody pushed against it. Nobody fought against it. It was just accepted as part of that dark side of life. Otherwise, the numbers wouldn't be so astronomical as you described.
Yeah, it's sad to think that so many people are going to learn so many awful things. You know.
But you know what? It's the price of growing up. You can't live in a Disney story anymore. It was nice. The 50s and 60s were, even with all of the headaches, you know, that the country suffered, you know, the young people protesting against Vietnam and all that. But still, everybody longed for the American way of life. Remember that? When everybody flocked to those words, American way of life? Well, that's going to end up meaning something completely different.
Well, we believed in it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like Dolly and I get all reminiscing about different things in our past. And it was a great time to grow up for most people because you had a lot of hope. You know, anybody could be president of the United States. You can succeed. All you have to do is apply yourself. You know, there weren't any limitations built into our mental perception of reality. And then all of a sudden, you know, they shoot the president of the United States, and now nobody can be president of the United States unless your name is Bush.
Yeah.
You know, or Clinton. And it's just a totally different timeline started up.
Well, did you ever see that? I mean, the book is amazing, and the movie was very well done, very faithful to the book. The writer, Jerzy Kosinski, wrote this book called Being There, and the movie was done by, he was still alive, Peter Sellers, and this lady, what do you call them? Shirley MacLaine, they're the main actors. You remember the story? The title.
I remember. I saw it, Walt, but I don't remember the story at all. Go for it.
Well, the whole thing is it's an entire what do you call it? It's like a morality play about the ironies and absurdities of the Washington culture, because Peter Sellers is this very quiet man. It turns out to be autistic. He's not mentally competent for anything. The man is autistic. So all his life, he lived as a servant in this house of a wealthy person. Well, not a super wealthy person, but he was taken care of, and he was the gardener. That was his thing. He loved the garden. He took care of the plants. And the only other person that knew him was a black lady that retired from the job after the homeowner died. And she went on to live at a nursing facility. And the problem with him is also the name that he had was, I think, the name that the homeowner gave him. His name was Chance. So when people would ask him, "Who are you?" he would say, "Chance the gardener." And so he gets, the bank comes and takes over the house. So he's left on the street with a suitcase, and he's very well dressed because the man had taught him to dress very well. So he's wearing a bowler hat, an expensive coat, and his addiction was television. He just absolutely, you turn on the TV, he would be hooked on it 24/7 unless you shut it off. So, you know, what can you say? He's very nice. But essentially, he's an idiot. I'm not trying to offend people with mental faculties. You know, everything is today's political propriety, but that's the fact. I mean, he's autistic. So he's outside. He's in front of this showcase window with TVs, and he's looking at something on the TV And I forget what is it that he's looking at, but he starts walking backwards, and he's walking between two vehicles, and the vehicle, one of the vehicles backs up and hits, squeezes his leg against the vehicle parked behind it. And it turned out to be a limo, and Shirley MacLaine is riding inside because she's a very wealthy woman. She's married, you know, to a Washington political, what was the name of this actor? Not Walter Pidgeon. Very old classic actor. Very, very wealthy man. So she's married. Essentially, she looks like she's married to her great-grandfather. That's what the marriage looks like. So she tells the chauffeur, go see what's going on. What did you do? And they invite him into the limo, you know, with a suitcase, and he's in pain. He's holding onto his leg, and they ask him, you know, what is your name? And so he's talking in pain, and he says, Chauncey Gardner. So immediately they interpret that his name is Chauncey, Chauncey Gardner, not Chance the Gardener. So here they, you know, they take him back to the house because the man has a 24/7 medical group attending him because he's got this blood illness and he knows he's going to die from it. So part of he's got a house that has, you know, an elevator, such a gigantic mansion. So, you know, they are going to have one of the doctors and staff look at his leg. But the thing is that he's so quiet and he just goes along with everything that's said that they think that he's like the most sober person on earth. And he's very smart. Like, these guys talk to him, and he just shakes his head. And every time they ask his opinion on something, he responds with analogies of, like, the gardener, something that he would know from the garden. So he would say, yes. They would say, what is your opinion on such and such a policy? And he would respond things like, yes, if the tree is not well tended, it will not grow. It will not bear fruit. And they thought, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody starts applauding. That is the smartest, most wisest thing we've ever heard. So the entire thing is a morality play of the absurdity of, you know, Washington political culture. At the very end, that was the conspiracy going on behind closed doors. We're going to put him in the presidency. You know, he would be a great man to have in the White House. An autistic guy. You're going to have an autistic ex-gardener sitting in the Oval Office.
Well, you know, they've got that movie out on Cheney. I think it's called Vice, which is, you know, funny, Vice. It's coming out sometime in the next week or so. I would really like to see what they present, because the promos for it, for instance, the well-known episode where he shot one of his hunting partners. Okay, now we were told that this was an accidental thing. Well, in the promo for this movie, he aims it at the guy and pulled the trigger.
So is Cheney still alive?
Yeah. And that was weird because he was one of those people at the big thing for the senior Bush funeral. And he looked pretty darn good for somebody that's got like an artificial heart or something close to it.
Clone.
Clone. he wasn't wearing his glasses. And he
talk
was
about a talk about a staging error.
Yeah, you know, I did find that to be an odd thing. And then Kissinger looked like a beach whale. I'm sorry,
rotting under the sun.
He was just, you know, this big body sitting in this pew, you know, with a Jabba the Hutt kind of vision, you know. And one commentator who and I mean a lot of people just had fun looking at the audience, you know, who's doing what and what are they saying, and I mean it's been great fun. But one of them said, is this guy still here? I mean, like, when's he going to leave the planet? I mean, they were unkind, you know?
They still got 10 more clones in the tanks. We gotta use them, otherwise we don't get our money back.
Well, Kissinger. I mean, seriously, Dolly has a problem with it, because I sort of think of myself as not quite a kid when Kissinger came into the scene. Maybe I was. I mean, I think maybe he was with John Kennedy initially. But he seems like he's been there my whole life, and I'm like, you know, 70.
I remember I was in this country back in the 70s, between 70 and 75. I was living in New York with my parents. And whenever there would be a political something on the TV, and you would see this man make an appearance, he was already middle-aged, at least to my eyes, between 30 and 40 years old. So he's got to be over 100 now, right?
Well, yeah, he always looked just like really old, but now he looks like...
Why can't Dolly ask her posse? That posse that she's got milling around her, the one that walk around with the pink jackets with the sparkle writing on the back, the Florida scaredy cats. the ones she scares every now and then. They must have something. Is that something... Dolly, I know that you're hearing us. Is that something legal that you can ask? Is Kissinger the real one or a clone? Or that's a forbidden question.
Well, you just,
now I have to wait 30 seconds, buffer time.
20 seconds, but it's...
20 seconds.
It's going to just piss her off. She doesn't like him. I'm really fascinated because... You know, people have said, well, it was some kind of a subpoena or some kind of a legal document that was in those papers. But my thing is that you can't serve a subpoena by putting it in a you know, like a schedule thing. What do they call it? Program thing. You have to hand it to them. They have to identify themselves as you know, yes, Hillary Clinton, you know, we're here. So I don't think it was a legal presentation. But there was something that all they needed to do was glance down at it and get the gist of what
it was.
Well,
once they touch it with their hands, doesn't that mean something? You touched it, you looked at it, that means that you're acknowledging it?
No, that's not the way it works. Hey, what do you hear from Argentina? Are they, is there any... ill content within the population there? Is there any kind of revolting going on down in South America?
I don't know right now. All I can tell from a short exchange between there's a lady that we are in, that my mom's communicating with. She's not directly a blood relative, but she belongs to she's a member of a family where one of the members of that family was married to an uncle of my mother. So she's like an in-law type relative, not a blood relative. And the way that life continues to be there, it's like living in Dodge City back in the 1800s. It's like cowboy law. Because she was telling us, she was asking me if I know somebody here in the U.S. that wants to invest, that there's a winery for sale. And she's aware that there are people all over the world that, you know, want to invest. And the crazy thing that she's describing is that, like, for example, here, let's say I sign with a real estate agent and I list my house with Mr. John Smith, real estate agent. And his job is to find a buyer for my house. If I sell the house behind his back, I'm liable because I signed a contract with the estate agent, correct? He can sue me because I sold the house from under him?
I would think.
Okay. Well, even though that exists over there, nobody does it. So constantly, real estate agents, their commissions are being shot because they're representing a property, for example. But then somebody gets wind that you're representing this property, and they go get a willing customer, a buyer for this. They go, they have a secret meeting behind my back with the owner of the property. They sell it, and there goes my commission. So I said to my mom, wait a minute, isn't there such a thing as a contract? I don't care if it's not in the law books, but you should be able to have a paper contract between two people that I'm representing you. And if you sell behind my back, you owe me my commission. And then she responded, yeah, that exists. It's called exclusivity contract. But he says the owner of this winery doesn't want to do that because he's had bad experiences in the past. So the picture that she paints, she's got a colleague who does this for a living, and she's constantly in a state of drama because they keep stealing her clients. Or she's representing a property and somebody else brings a buyer that's willing to buy less, and she ends up losing her commissions. And my mom says, you're describing a Roman circus. And I said to my mom, you know, that's the most perfect image you could convey. You know, you have all this bunch of gladiators and whoever's left standing wins. This is the kind of lawlessness that's life down there. And it's life as usual for them. And I said, oh my God, I don't know how could anybody live that way.
So yeah, whoever, it is awful to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, you're representing a property and all of a sudden, oh, the owner got a better offer from this other guy and goodbye, I don't need you anymore. Well, what about all the work I put in, all the days and contacts and conversations and talking to people and putting ads and listings and whatnot? You got to kiss all the money goodbye because the owner found another buyer?
Well, think about it. You know, you've got this situation in the United States here, okay, where the people who were supposedly upholding the law of the land are in absolute disdain of the law regarding anything they do. And so that mentality is probably what happened in Argentina too, and it trickles down into the population, so nobody gives a shit about what the law says. Everybody just does what they can get away with. And so what you're pointing out to us as being a reality there is essentially what they want here, except that here we still have guns. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and there, many times it's been explained to me the reasons why the government want to pass gun control, because that way you have a population that can't defend itself. So that has been the one saving grace, is that by people having guns, yeah, they can defend themselves. And the population outnumbers the armed forces, so...
Well, it's more than just that, because if you look at the way that the law is written, it's not strictly a law to give us the rights to own a gun. It gives us the responsibility to own a gun. Because what they're saying is that a good militia makes for a good government. And that people have the responsibility to watch the government. And that's where we all fell down. You know, there were too many people that were willing to look the other way. And so they you know, they screwed with everything. And now
it goes back to the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Remember, I told you the anecdote that Dr. Costa gave, where when they signed, they struck out that part where it said, to end, when they were doing that, the preamble, the freedom, you know, freedom of creed, freedom of this, freedom of that, and they wrote it down. It was in written form. Freedom of want and freedom of the fear of want, meaning that everybody would be taken care of. There wasn't supposed to be any poverty. And the guys crossed that off. So all the fathers of the nation, all the people that were involved in signing the document, they went home and they got their muskets. They were going to go to war over this. And it was Washington, George Washington, who said, let's, instead of having a bloodbath after having signed this document, it was, if you remember, it was signed at 3 a.m. because the Masons follows the rules of astrology. So I don't know how tired they were, but they were ready to fight over this.
Well, so not only tired, but they were drinking beer all night and smoking marijuana. So, you know.
So he says that George Washington calmed him by saying, okay, in such and such a date, we have to ratify this and we have to agree on it, and then we'll fix it. And it never got fixed. In fact, somebody on his way to the ratification got assassinated, you know, got killed. So they got their way. The cabal got their way. They struck that out of the Declaration of Independence.
And I'm trying to remember which one it was. Monroe, maybe, said, no, it was, I think it was Jackson, that said that, you know, he was more afraid of the banks than he was a standing army.
Mm.
I mean, that says a lot, because that's exactly what the problem is this banking thing. Now they've got this quantum. That quantum thing kind of bothered me. It sounded very artificial intelligence. AI is going to watch.
Well, that has been painted. I spent all of the 70s and more reading sci-fi, and if memory serves, in one of Isaac Asimov's books, that's the way they were able to keep everything taken care of in all the countries. The computer system would analyze everything. Like, for example, let's say this country is well known for its orange exports. Well, this year they had a bad year because they had drought, so there's less oranges. So the computer system, in order to balance that out so that people don't suffer any lack or any, because they have less production, it would balance things out by adjusting things where in other countries where there's an excess of oranges. So it would find, it would constantly be looking at that, what's happening in the different areas in order to keep the system in balance and everything flowing correctly. And humans, even they could be on the phone all day long, they can't handle that much data on any given day, but the system doesn't sleep. So that picture that he describes, it's been painted in sci-fi books. I know I read it in the 70s. And I, what was the, no, it wasn't Sentinel. I remember the title of the story was not Sentinel. It was Guardian or something, but what was interesting is that in the word of the name of the system, instead of the letter O, it was the, you know how in when you're writing when you're writing computer code, you have to find a way to differentiate the letter O from the number zero, and normally zero gets crossed over. So when you see the circle with a line across it, that's a zero. Yeah. So the name of the story is a single word, which is the name of the system, and it had a letter O in the word, but the O has been replaced by the number zero. And this, and it kept, that's what it, that was his job, to manage, to make sure there wouldn't be any lack or overabundance, so that everything would be kept in balance, so nobody suffered from lack of anything.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good thing.
Well, at least it liberates your time to do something useful as opposed to wasting, because when you look at the it's a bleak world where all your youth is spent in working and producing for somebody else, where what about your infinite consciousness and your divinity? It's not being used correctly. Remember the ultimate purpose of humanity, as Anastasia painted it in the books, is to go out and continue taking care of other worlds. This thing that has happened has kept humanity locked in this planet, unable to move out. Our potential, we're not even touching 1% of our potential. We are creator, we're not the God, but we are creator gods, and that stuff, we are being reduced to livestock. So if there's a civilization where our potential is being kept in the dark, it's us. You know, who wrote that law? That at a certain age, you finish school, you have to get a job, and the next 50, 60 years of your life, you have to keep working to feed who, what? Wild animals live a better life than you, even with all the things that they have to go through, because they understand that nature is maintaining them. And man has to maintain himself. That's twisted. So that's why, if anything, the Ringing Cedars book is showing you what natural life should be like, where nature is taking care of you. So that then your intellect, your mental powers, your spiritual powers, everything is liberated to do what you're supposed to do. Because that was one of the things that the Creator said to the Vedrus people. I can't do everything. So you are part of me, and therefore you are part of the task of taking care of things. But and that explains, because haven't you ever wondered in the books where when Vladimir was visiting her, that many times she would go off for hours on end because she was busy. And then you ask yourself, okay, she doesn't have to cook, she doesn't have to clean, she doesn't have to keep house. She doesn't have to go to a store to buy clothing. She wore very little, I guess, in the summertime. So what would a person like this be busy with? And to me, the answer is obvious enough. She was super busy working with people on the mental level. She kept trying to teach people and guide them and have them learn stuff on waking up human consciousness. And that's what we're supposed to be doing, not, you know, minding a register somewhere or washing bathrooms in a restaurant or stuff. It's insulting. It's like having a super sophisticated, I'm just coming up with some image out of the top of my head. Imagine having a super sophisticated laptop that has tremendous computing power, and you go ahead and you use it as a hammer to hammer a nail into a block of wood. That's what it's like. You have this tremendous being with almost unlimited potential, and you're using it to take care of a register. If you're using it to paint walls, when this person with this embodied spirit, which in and of itself an embodied spirit is something amazing to look at, this is what its life is reduced to? Just a labor machine? So.
Well.
So if you can give off all that work to the machines we've created, then that's good use of technology, as opposed to having technology rule us.
Well, you know, a couple of Sundays ago, I had a conversation with Kimberly Schultz and Bobby Vaughn Jr. concerning transhumanism. And that was a real wake-up call to me, because I don't like to even think about it. It sounds so nutty.
Don Winter literally shows you why it doesn't work.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're sort of at the top of the hour, and I thought when we come back that we could, because I did see the first hour. I didn't have a chance to look at the second hour of that video.
Oh, that's even better.
Okay, so let's just take a 4-minute break here, and it's Disturbance, Sounds of Silence.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you. A vision softly creeping left its scenes while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a split the night and touch the sound of silence.
Welcome back to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Walt Silva. And this is a production of Cosmic Reality Radio. We are going to talk about transhumanism some more. Walt, I'm assuming you're back, yes?
No. Was muted, sorry.
Oh, okay. There you go. Good, good, good. Okay, when I was talking to Bobby and Kimberly, the gist of what he was saying is that they've already got in the works this ability for the human consciousness through these avatar concepts to be able to see what a robot is seeing, to see what is on Mars because you're inside a robot experiencing. And that after people get used to that, then they're going to get used to the idea of your consciousness actually being uploaded into these things. And then you go into the concept of, you know, live forever, have your human body replaced with a cyber body and blah, blah, blah. To me, which is
welcome
so...
Welcome to prison.
It's like, you know, was just insane. And but see, now Bobby's been doing his research in this thing, and he started naming people who are, you know, going along with this concept. And to be honest, I didn't take their names down. I kind of don't even want to think about them. But one of them is that Musk guy. The
what?
SpaceX guy. What's his name?
Oh, Elon Musk.
Musk, yeah. Elon Musk. Yeah, he's one of them. Transhumanism. And the statement that I found when I was sort of looking for to make a promo for that particular show was I got into looking at where do you see AI in the advertising? Because if you watch television, every fourth commercial is something to do with AI. But when I Googled it, Walt, there was nothing really came up at all. No matter how many ways I tried to think in terms of search, you know, phrases that might tweak it,
Did you use Tor to search the dark web?
No, I didn't. I didn't do that. I was just seeing what the average person would see. And it just wasn't there. So I found that to be very interesting. The only thing I found was a picture of, and it was being advertised as Sprint's commercial for the Super Bowl that it hasn't even happened yet in 2018. Well, no, maybe it did, because we're going to have the next one in 2019, so this must have been last year's. But nothing with this big robot thing that he's walking around with now. You know, the guy that used to be with Verizon and now he's with Sprint? The one that said, "Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?"
Oh, I don't get television, so what's the deal with
him? Well, that guy, you must be familiar with him at least. And he was with Verizon doing those commercials. Well, Verizon dumped him, so Sprint picked him up, so now he's working for Sprint.
He doesn't use that phrase,
but you know, it's he's their new over. He's got a new station now. He's with Sprint. All of them, you know, saying how they're going to be the best 5G, and oh my God, I don't even know what to think about where it's going out there. But this transhumanism, the commercials that I did see were pretty scary, because one of them had a young girl, maybe 10 years old, leaning over kissing a robot. And it was for little girls' shoes. That's the advertisement. But very, very strange image. They've got these new automated robotic type of things in one of the South American airports. I'm not sure which one, but in other airports too, I'm sure by now. But it's got a little girl's face in it. It's supposed to be giving you, you know, arrival and departure stuff, but it was really weird. It was like, why are you using the image of a little girl? You know, so it's friendly. It was spooking me out. I mean, these things were spooking me out.
It sounds something that, like, sorry, but it sounds like something a pedophile would like.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, you get to wondering how much of this stuff has been ingrained in other, you know, I was innocently looking for AI and finding these really kind of spooky things. I don't know. It's just all very strange. But anyway, so we were talking about it off radio, and you said that Dan Winters had a whole discussion about, he didn't use the word transhumanism because this went back quite a few years, this particular video, but that it gives you the reason why transhumanism won't work. So would you like to kind of explain that?
Well, I'll do my best to remember most of what he said. It's as I said to Nancy, it's a 2-hour video. Did I give you the link so we can put it on the radio chat?
Yeah, I'll get it.
Well, he goes on to explain, because in other Dan Winter videos, more recent videos, when he talks about DNA, he talks like you're already versed in everything he has to say about it. So when I said to this man who sent me the link, you know, I have no idea what he's talking about, because he's talking to someone that already knows what he has to say about it. So he was kind enough to send me this link to an older lecture that, judging from his physical appearance and from the laptop that appears in the lecture, it must have been filmed like in the mid-90s or late 90s. So he looks like a younger version of himself. Dan Winter's kid brother, because he's got no beard and obviously he looks younger, but I think it must have been mid-90s or late 90s. And he goes on to explain with graphics and everything how DNA is practically, when you look at the structure of how it sits inside the cell, It's a wave within a wave within a wave. It's spirals within spirals within spirals in such a way that they're nested within each other. And he says, and shows you the graphic, and you can see here how the smaller wave is embedded in this larger wave. And what is really interesting is the way that he presents the analogy of what is it that you're looking at when you're seeing all these cascaded way, this curvature that's within itself. And he says that if you consider the totality of DNA as a story, like you would see a book. Okay, let's say you're holding a book, and this book is a story, any story, fiction or real life or nonfiction. And, okay, what is the book made of? Well, a book is made up of chapters. What are the chapters made up of? Well, the chapters are made up of paragraphs. What are paragraphs made of? Well, paragraphs are made up of sentences. What are sentences made up of? Words. What are words made up of? Letters. He says when a genetic engineer is looking at that image that you normally see associated with DNA that looks like a step ladder that's been twisted into a double spiral, he says that's what they're looking. They're looking at the letters in a word, and they have no idea what the book says. So because they have no idea what the book says, they call it junk DNA. And he goes on to back up what he's explaining with the work of other scientists that have worked extensively studying this. And he goes on to explain that what they refer to as junk DNA is the whole book. And he says, and the DNA is very, very precise when it's replicating different parts of the code. And he goes on to say, how do you explain that? How do you achieve such a level of precision over and over and over again, because this is happening constantly. It's not that it's replicating code today and then it takes a rest for a month. No, it's constantly doing, replicating itself and multiplying and replenishing cells and replenishing tissues. So how does it do it? And then he goes on to explain that the reason it's so precise is because he refers to it as context richness. And he reminded me of what I did when I used to tutor students for their tests, especially in language comprehension. I would teach them that to pay attention to the context of something, like when they're supposed to understand what a word means or what a word refers to. I said, even if you've never seen this word before, pay attention to the context. Like, for example, you're reading a sentence, and the sentence reads, okay, Betty got a knife from the utensils drawer so that she could slice the Deldorf and make sandwiches. You've never seen the word Deldorf, but right off the bat, you can see that it's some kind of bread, because she's going to take a knife, and she's going to slice it in order to make sandwiches. So the context to the word is telling you what it is. It's not an adjective. It's not a verb. You can see that it's a sound. It's a noun. And the context is telling you that this is some kind of something that you eat. And at least you can make sandwiches with it. So this is what he's saying, is that because of the context richness in DNA, if there's something missing in a piece of code that is replicating, the rest of the code is telling you what should go here and what's the correct code. He says, but scientists, you know, they found one of the authors that he quotes, and he puts the quote on the screen. He says, scientists found the scissors and run off with it. Where they start cutting into DNA and they think, oh, this is, I don't know what this is, I'll throw it out. And he says, you're doing that wrong. And he goes on to explain how the DNA is mechanically connected to the heart because of the sounds that the heart makes, the vibration that it makes. He goes on to show how the heart, first off, is not a single pump. It's not a single muscle pump. Literally, the heart is made up of seven layers of muscles, the discrete muscles. So when it's pumping the blood, it's not just like a piston running inside a cylinder, pump, pump, pump. It doesn't work that way. These seven layers of muscles actually contract in a specific pattern so that they spin the blood at a high velocity, creating a vortex. So when he shows the energetic emanations of the heart, he shows that there you have these toroidal fields, and they're cascaded one inside the other. And so when one rotates out, it goes back into the center, creating another one and another one, until finally they go into this very tiny vortex. And he says, it's so powerful, the heart is capable of producing its own gravity. And he says, the depending on the vibration, the song that the heart is giving out, he says the thymus gland that sits behind the sternum, it's like a catcher's mitt. It's catching this of these signals from the heart, and that's going into the DNA. And that way, he says, that goes on to explain a lot of things. Like, for example, when someone gets depressed for whatever reason, depending on how long they stay in that state, the person's health begins to degrade, because that's the message that the heart is giving the body. You know, you have to go decrepit. You have to get sick, because this is where we're going to restart replicating, because we're in a very bad state. When you're in a state of love, euphoria, enthusiasm, the heart is putting out that kind of song. So then your DNA is going to replicate beautifully with all positive things. You know, it's going to regenerate parts of the body. It's going to regenerate, restore, recover. So things, the systems in the body are going to get better, not worse. And it's all based on that interaction between the heart and the DNA, because he goes on to show the energy fields. This is why the golden mean ratio is so critically important, because the relationship between all these different waves that are encased in the DNA, they're all based on 1.618, the golden mean ratio. Because when you have energy waves that differ one from the other by that proportion, 1.618, the waves are able, they have positive interference, in the sense that when you have, let me backtrack so I can give you a better example. You have a wave, and it has a specific phase where the wave goes positive first, then goes negative. Okay. And you create another wave of the same frequency, but it has the opposite phase. It goes negative, then it goes positive. If you put them together, you'll get a straight line, because one wave is canceling the other. So that's destructive interference. But he goes on to show that when waves are related to each other by the space of 1.618, even if it's multiples of 1.618, let's say it's 2.618 or 3.618, there is constructive interference. They actually come together on what he calls conjugation, like a couple having conjugal relations. They actually produce a third way and a fourth and a fifth way. So that's the nature of, that's how DNA works. And he says, and these things, as the frequency goes faster and faster, these things accelerate to an infinitesimal point where the energy goes off faster than the speed of light. And that's when you enter into time. And that entering into time is very critical, because that's one of the ways that we, you've experienced it. Other people have experienced it. You have these abilities that cannot be scientifically explained. Like, for example, the thing that Dali does, that she's able to talk to people on the other side. That's because her DNA has not been manipulated. Her DNA is able to accelerate into that vortex, and she's able to see into the other side. Remember, she had an NDE and then she came back. So this is an example of someone with, you know, their pure natural DNA. Nothing has been altered. Nothing has been technically altered. But when he goes on to describe, when civilizations are reliant on external agencies or external technology to maintain their DNA. Like, for example, he goes on to say how the Anunnaki relied on that white gold ormus powder in order to live indefinitely. Their DNA has lost that ability to accelerate beyond the speed of light. They've lost the ability to enter into time. So their ability to evolve naturally is now stunted. You can't, because now you're stuck in this technological reliance. That's why he admonishes against artificial achievement of your psychic capacity using drugs and other, you know, mind-altering substances, because now it's not you anymore. It's the substance that is actually doing the work. So he says, when your DNA is pure and whole and it's doing this, this accelerating into an infinitesimal vortex, he says you experience these things that are natural, like lucid dreaming. And he goes on to, you know, describe the things that you're capable of when your DNA is fully functional. He says, and that's the number one risk of consuming genetically modified substances, that because these genetic engineers are making cuts into what would be the natural DNA of an organic material, whether it be a tomato or whatever it is that's been genetically modified, now you're consuming that. Your body is being made aware of this code. This code has been entered into your body. So now your own DNA is being truncated. Your own DNA is beginning to lose that ability to enter into infinity, to move into time. So in a way, I guess, the more GMO you consume, the dumber you get. Your psychic abilities begin to turn off one by one. So that's why it was, and then in the second hour, he goes on to, he gets into this transhumanism thing. He talks about I forget, because he talks so fast. You really have to pay attention. Every sentence is chock full of information. He calls something the Borg Queen phenomena, because he says when a civilization, it's in that state where they've sustained themselves artificially. And let's say you have complete telepathy. Everybody communicates telepathically. You've lost that your natural evolution, because natural evolution has to do with the individual. But now individuality has been lost, because everyone's connected. Like, it's like the Borg. Everybody knows what everybody is thinking. There is no I anymore. And that I is very critical. It is part of your DNA. So it was really, he took me back in time when he said that. Because I remember back in New York, I mean, decades ago when I was still living in New York, I remember hearing a presenter. This was a Spanish-speaking presenter who was talking about why the heck, you know, somebody said asked the question, if these alien civilizations are so incredibly advanced and blah, 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 what the heck are they doing here? Are we like cavemen to them? And the man says, nothing could be further from the truth. They're not here because we look like cavemen to them. They're here because they don't understand how is it that we can do what they cannot. That thing that we do where each of us is individual and someone could be very advanced, sitting next to a person that's as dumber than a bag of hammers, and their civilization doesn't exist. Everybody has the same level of intellectual capacity. Everybody's essentially the same. So when you have that situation with any given civilization, that's when you're in an evolutionary standstill. There's no change anymore. There's no movement. Your DNA spiral is not accelerating into time. It's not moving into that infinity vortex that happens. He explains that very well with his graphics. So I hope I did some justice to him, because you have to listen to him
Well, where I got it was when he was discussing how the trees grow.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you look up at a tree. I mean, how many times in our lives have we looked up at a tree and you see the tree's pattern, and yet whoever really looks at what the pattern is, and the pattern is that the tree limbs are growing so that the tree, every limb gets as much possible sunlight as is conceivable within a given pattern. And that pattern corresponds to the golden mean ratio.
Right.
That just floored me. It was like, where isn't this thing?
Yeah. It's in your body. If you take the length of your arm from your wrist to your elbow, and you divide that by the length of your hand from the wrist to the tip of the middle finger, you get 1.618. All the proportions in your body, your face, everything follows that proportion. So it's not an accident. I mean, how many times did she repeat herself? Man has made nothing superior to nature in the books. So if you're trying to outdo nature, you're on for a rude awakening.
Well, the other thing I found interesting was when he was looking down, he said, pretend you're looking into a slinky and you're looking down through the tube. A slinky, mm-hmm. if people remember or maybe not, it's this wire that's brought together. They're about, 3 inches in diameter, and they would walk down the stairs, you know, they'd...
Yeah, it's a metal spring.
Right, metal string. But you're looking down into it, and that the inside of the DNA helix was actually, what did they call it? A dodecahedron?
And it was it's a projection of a dodecahedron.
And it's ten-sided. Now...
Well, no, a dodecahedron has 12 sides.
Well, that's what I was wondering about, because he said ten-sided, right. And then he said a dodecahedron, and I was pretty...
Well, he's not counting the top and the bottom. He's just counting the edges of the what do you call it, the equator of the dodecahedron.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. So what does that particular shape, how does that correspond to a shungite C60?
I don't know. There is a presentation that he talks about the fullerenes, and he explains that the fullerenes are fractal, because this whole thing is that every time you abandon fractality, which is the whole structure of the universe, everything that's alive, everything that's natural is fractal in nature. When you get away from that fractality is when you get into trouble, because you're moving into unnatural things. And I did hear him say, I apologize, I did not listen to that lecture. It was about a different subject. And again, when I watched that lecture, I hadn't seen this one. So he was losing me with this DNA thing. He was talking like he would be talking to an expert, and I'm not an expert. But he did bring up somebody in the hall there asked about the fullerene, and he says, yes, the fullerene is fractal in its geometry and in the work that it does. So I guess that explains why it's so life-enhancing. Everything about shungite and the field that it puts out, it's enhancing to life. It's like the opposite of radiation. That's the death energy. It's concentrated death energy. This is the opposite.
Well, when I look at the process, what I see happening is you've got the fullerene. And at each of the nodes of the carbon atoms where they come together, you have a null point or a zero point or a vortex between the quantum field and the 3D field. And it, when that thing is opened up, especially when we're using the S4 that keeps it in an open position, with just the raw powder or the raw nugget, it pulses, it shuts, it opens, shuts, pulse, pulse, pulse. But with the S4, it stays open. So when you're pulling in from the quantum field, my question to the, you know, divine intervention universe it was, what is it that we're pulling in? And I got proto energy, okay, that comes in like a wave, but then turns into whatever. It's like a source of energy for whatever thought form is being manifested.
Correct.
So that's why people are now openly talking about how quickly manifestation seems to be happening. And that's because you're essentially got so many pieces on the world grid of shungite around there that you're pulling in a lot more proto-energy that will then manifest into whatever reality you're perceiving. And that's why it becomes more and more critical that people become aware of their thoughts. You know, don't worry. Don't go out there. Don't feed the fear. Don't feed the doubt. You know, come to a point of certainty. And once you get into that balanced feeling of certainty, then you're much more able to be effective. Essentially, because you're not being scattered and you can focus your energies. And shungite's a marvelous tool for doing that.
And it's a natural, that you take into account that it, in a way it's a natural filter, because since you can't use it for negative things, then good luck trying to manifest something negative. It just won't let you. The other thing that, remember, I don't know if you remember it from the presentation, because I do remember it was in the first part of the presentation, when he's in one of the graphics that he's putting on the computer, he's looking at the hydrogen bond in one of the DNA molecules, and he's showing the graphic. Yeah, what got my attention was when they draw the chemical structure in organic chemistry and they make the geometric shapes. When he talks about that, I forget what it was, it hydrogen bond. It's a hexagon married to a pentagon. And it was funny because that's exactly what we have when you're looking at a fullerene. You have pentagons and hexagons brought together to create a sphere. I thought that can't be a coincidence.
Well, I didn't quite get into the part where he was talking about the magnetism of the heart and what it's doing, but mm-hmm. It did when in thinking about the whole subject where he was going from it. It is a very interesting thing concerning the power of the heart and the fact that it seems to be putting out a signal that if you sync to your own heartbeat, you know, that's why I love our song, the theme song, you know, let your heart be the master. If you just mm-hmm. give over to the energies that are naturally being produced in your own heart, you're bioelectromagnetic field becomes very stable. You're more grounded, and you're more able to imagine what your potential is versus worry about your limitations.
Exactly. Now you can understand why in ancient times this thing of the soul sitting in the center of the brain is unnatural. That's a manipulation that was a result of what they did in Atlantis. But in reality, the soul has to sit in the center of the heart. Because when you compare the heart to the brain, energy-wise, it's like comparing a little Jenny generator to the power output of an entire city. The field of the heart is so big, it's almost the size of the energy field of the body itself. And this is documented in that Rumbalo Melchizedek's books, Living in the Heart, when he goes on to talk. And if you and you have confirmation of this because you have that memory, when you were here from Mars, that if anybody in the field died, you needed to take out the beating heart to take it back with you. Otherwise, that soul would be trapped in the atmosphere of Earth.
Yes. That's true.
Yeah. Because that's where the soul would connect. It would install. You know, think about it. Given a chance, here you can sit in this Rolls Royce, indestructible Rolls Royce that doesn't use fuel and it will run forever, or you can sit in this scooter that will last you, what, maybe 60 years? Where would you sit? And there's no, it's just a choice. Nobody's charging you any money for it. You know, that's where it would sit. But this was part of that manipulation, consciousness manipulation that was done to put people. And I think it was done at the same time that they deployed the veil, which doesn't exist for certain people like Dolly. There's no veil for her.
And it's getting thinner all the time.
Yeah.
You know. So, let's see. What else has happened this last week? Did you come across any other interesting thingies?
I don't remember. I've just been busy making my own stuff. Like I made a pineal coil and it totally cleared the house. It's amazing. But that's some, you know, personal experiments, that's all. Nothing interesting.
Yet, until you mass produce them. Well, I have to say that this last week hasn't been all that very interesting. Did we talk about David Wilcock and his discussion concerning the ETs that were burnt out in the Paradise Fire?
Oh, fill me in. Pay attention, class. There'll be a quiz about this later.
Oh, I thought I talked about it. Maybe not. Yes, what happened was that he's on a... last week I played one of his... the first hour of an interview that he did just recently. And then the last 2 hours I played yesterday on Monday. But last week he got into this really bizarre statement. And it was, well, when I tell you what it is, you'll understand why it's so bizarre. This is David Wilcock, okay? And he said to these guys, look at this, is exclusive. And he said, and you know, I mean, I've been following David for a long time, and he says that a lot, you know, this is exclusive. But he just sort of let it out. And he said, a decade ago, because I wasn't really into what he was saying at that moment. I was transitioning, you know. And he said something about it being a decade before this. I was told that there was a settlement of ETs. He was specifically talking about a type of ET. And this ET has naturally like white hair. Their pupils they have are like a cat's pupil. They... what are the other telltale signs? There's a couple of other things, but I don't remember. But anyway, they're a little bit different, but they can pass with not too much of a problem. And that they had been given a treaty that allowed them to set up a community. And he said that name of that community is Paradise, California. And that is the area where the campfire, you know, burnt out. And I heard just before I came on here, somebody was saying that the actual missing people death thingy is like 52,000. So he said...
That's the death count from the fires?
Well, you keep hearing different things. But just before I went on, I was listening to something. I can't even tell you what it was. And they were saying that was the latest that, I mean, because you'll hear 50 are missing from the mainstream media, but what's the real numbers? And part of the problem is there doesn't seem to be any bodies. They're just zapped. And of course, this is, you know, something that could easily be done by 5G microwave.
Now, the thing is that the fire was not complete. It was discrete. This house was destroyed, this was not. This house was destroyed, this was not. So it seems that the targeting was almost surgical, correct?
Some people say that. I don't know that for sure. I don't know. But David said that, in fact, that these people have a little bit of a problem staying up on the surface. And so there's underground facilities. He doesn't know how many might have been underground when all this started happening. Because one of the things that he was talking about was how fast these things were happening, that people were trying to get out of the way of these fires and burnt alive in their cars. You know, that's one hell of a fire.
And well, I remember seeing the pictures of the molten wheels, where the chrome wheels were, they look like molten wax on the concrete.
Yep. Same thing that's, you saw at 9/11.
So who gave these ETs permission to be there? This is a secret government agreement?
I believe it was a United States military agreement. And it's probably not the only location. But for David, Lance White and I got commenting on this, and we both had the same feeling, that for David Wilcock to take such a crazy leap in saying this, that it was more than likely true. Because he's cautious, because he knows he's been far out before, you know, and this was a bit of probably a heroic thing to have done.
Now, does he go on to explain why they are here? Are they here for a neutral reason? Are they here to what? What's their agenda?
Well, he believes that it was a disclosure event was about to happen, in that it would sort of be like, okay, don't be afraid of these people. For heaven's sakes, they've been living down in this town of California for the last 50 years. That type of thing. Oh.
And of all the places in the universe, they have to come and live here? Sorry. It makes me wonder.
I don't know what to tell you. I'm just telling you what David said.
Yeah, no. Is it, but are they supposedly, like, are they part of the reptilian group? Are they part of the, does he give a designation? Are they, like, part of the Pleiadian group? Are they part of the white Nordic group?
Well, I don't know if he said what they were, because I wasn't paying attention. Until he started talking about the fire connection. But he was, because he was running down the different versions of ETs, and to me, it's like, I don't know, you know, I don't need to know this until I see who might introduce themselves to me.
Well, this sounds like Linda Moulton Howe and that link I sent you, when she talks about this hidden war that has nothing to do with us. It's an ET with ET war that has been raging for the longest time.
And my feeling is that that's why humanity is being looked at by so many different species from all over the galaxy, if not the universe, because this is an occasion where so many different ETs have mucked with the human DNA that essentially we're all related. Human beings are related to them all. So if you're related to everybody out there, who's your enemy? Well, they're all your brothers and sisters. And it might be the last chance that the human experience, at least in this part of the known galaxy, is being viewed as a way out for so many other storylines in different parts of the galaxy. Because if we can demonstrate that, yes, we are co-creators, and this is how you go about co-creating a new reality, which is, you know, our favorite saying that absolute power demands absolute responsibility.
Yeah.
So we've been given many, many tools to do this. We have people who have been with us for this journey and more out there that we don't even know because they haven't made themselves known to us on the journey with us. It's a fascinating reality that we're into, Walter. Yeah. So next, well, we just went over that. It's Christmas next weekend, next week. So unless you decide you want to do a Christmas show, I suspect that we'll just say, we'll see.
It depends on how bored you're going to be.
Right.
I'm just going to be here, so.
Well, maybe we'll do something. But, yeah, you know about Wolf Spirits closing its doors.
I got an email.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, it is what it is. I just wish I hope everybody, you know, goes to a different place. It's a good place. I don't know what.
So he's doing away with old radio. He's moving into some other activity.
I don't know. I have no idea. All I know is what was in the email. You know, more radio, no more forum, no more Wolf Spirit. I don't know what these. I don't know anything more than that.
Oh.
But at the beginning of this today's shows, I played an ODD show where I was talking shungite with JP, and it was kind of bittersweet because it was the ODD show, which was the first show that I ended up with that I was a host on, you know, in Wolf Spirit. And it was like, it was such an interesting coming together with all the people that were there, the energies, you know, it was really good to begin with. And then, it wasn't that it was went bad. It was that we wanted to do more, basically.
So you outgrew it.
Well, you outgrew it with me. I mean, when you wanted to get out of the Simon Says, I said to you, "Do you want to?" And you said, "Well, the only reason I do it is so you don't have to do it alone." And that touched me so much that I told JP, I said, "We can't do this anymore." So that's.
Well, you saw what happened to me. He disrespected me like three times. He interrupted me when I was because we alternate. You know, we're either in a joking mood and we're saying something funny or we're saying something serious. And like three times, He interrupted me, and one time I was saying something serious, and he started making fun of me. So I'm thinking, wait a minute. So when you're hosting Simon Parks, you're absolutely sober. You have this worshipful adoration of the man. When we're on the show, we're just clowns to you. So I thought, I'm not putting up with this disrespect anymore.
Well, you know, I just wish everybody over there, you know, the best, because I know what it takes to do what Jay was doing. It was not an easy job, and I just hope he's okay with everything that's happening.
Yeah, the thing of taking questions in the middle of a show, that's, you got to have, like, what, multitasking capabilities to do that.
I can't even look at the chat. Seriously, I start looking
at
the chat.
You're the ultimate projector, Nancy.
I look at that chat, and all of a sudden I'm doing chat, and I completely forget that I'm live on radio. It's like crazy. So, Yeah, we had, well, I had this man that was supposed to be on the show live, Greg Foster, and he got so that he couldn't, he was in traffic and he couldn't get there on time. So I just played this tape that I had ready just in case. And then I had him call me, and I did a, it turned out to be about an hour and 15 minutes of a recording between him and I. And he turned out to be very, very interesting. So I'm going to have him on the Shungite show.
What is his field of interest?
Health. Health stuff. That's why he was in, he got into Shungite, because he's into health.
Oh.
And, you know, all the reasons you get into health with Shungite, the water and EMF and that sort of thing.
That's one of the things I wanted to comment. I didn't have the information. I looked it up when you were asking me about the relationship between the dodecahedron and the Shungite or the fullerene. And there is a resonance there, because the geometric shape of the fullerene is called truncated icosahedron. And it has 20 hexagons, but get this, it has 12 pentagons, and that's what makes a dodecahedron, 12 pentagons. So there is a resonance between one geometric form and the other.
Yes, the science is going to get thicker and thicker. Yeah, so we gotta see that movie Vice about Cheney. I wonder what that's gonna be about. It's gonna be fun. I don't normally go to the movies, but I don't really want to go to the movies for that one either. But I certainly hope it comes on to something that I watch.
So does the synopsis say that it's specifically related to him?
Oh yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, it looks identical to him, and also. The guy that's playing young George Bush is pretty good, too, seems like.
So his estate is not fighting the movie?
No, apparently not. It's getting a lot of pre-promo stuff. I've been seeing it for a while here.
Because I would expect lawsuits for the, what is it? What is it that they call character defamation, or defamation of character or something?
yeah. I don't know, but I do find it fascinating. And so, gee, are we running out of stuff to say? No, there was something I wanted to say to you. I can't remember what it was. Yes, I can. I just have to focus on what the heck was it.
Computer, focus.
Oh, that thing with the quantum computers and the banking.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that explains why they're building quantum computers in the first place.
I'm not sure what. I'm not even sure what those things are, but they're kind of freaky.
Well, believe it or not, people get so confused, and in reality, the concept of it is simplicity itself, because you understand at their most basic level. Computers don't understand words or phrases or anything. Like when you write a program code, and let's say you're a C++ coder and you write programs in C++, and you just wrote a word processing program so that people can write letters. Okay, the computer doesn't know what the heck you just wrote. What happens is that program has to be compiled down into assembler language, and then assembler language gets translated into binary. So the only thing that the computer understands is binary, zeros and one. That's it, zeros and ones. It just does it so incredibly fast that you say, oh my goodness, this computer is so fast and it's so smart. Look, all that it did in just a couple of minutes. Well, the quantum computer, because zeros and ones is an extremely discrete and limited. Because you either have a zero or you have a one. There's nothing in between. But many years ago, before they even spoke of quantum computing, they were already dealing with an intermediate to quantum computer, which is called fuzzy logic, which is, okay, what happens between this value and this value? What happens between 0 and 1? And many people were arguing, well, you could have an eternity of things happen between 0 and 1. There's so much space between a 0 and a 1. So I think that naturally evolved into what they call quantum computer, which is a computer that not only considers zeros and ones, yes or no, but everything in between. So the answer, the processing language at the language level of the machine is not limited to zeros and ones. It can consider values between, and there, it's not a defined set of values. It could be a series of values between 0 and 1. So you understand how complex this is, because, okay, when you're dealing with transistors, MOSFETs, whatnot, that's all they understand, on and off, on and off. For anybody out there that has ever played with Boolean logic, that's the basic of Boolean logic, on and off, zeros and one. And you can have all the gates you want and all the different elements in Boolean logic, but still, the elements is the same, on and off, zeros and one. This machine is designed in such a way that it takes into account that I have this question, but the answer does not necessarily mean that it's going to be zero or one. It could be something in between. So that's why it's quantum. It's taking all that, because that's the, what is it that we say when we talk about the quantum field? It is the quantum of infinite potentials, of everything that has been, is, and will be. Well, that's what this thing is attempting to grasp, the infinite potentials between a zero and a one. I think that's why they're so huge. Have you seen the pictures of those things?
Yeah, I was just thinking, what would happen if they integrated Shungite into them?
Yeah, that would be major.
Where's Mr. Tesla?
Oh, well, hopefully he learned his lessons. Don't deal with bankers. Don't go near bankers. Stay away from bankers. Well, maybe that's because such a thing, think about it, quantum computing would not allow for banking fraud. It would go against the grain of the programming, because banking fraud destroys the entire system. It's like throwing a giant wrench into the works.
I don't know. It's one of those situations where I want to think in terms of trusting that the technology can be of great benefit to us, while at the same time being paranoid as can be about what it could do to control us. And
well, it comes down to who's sitting behind the driver's, the steering wheel, Nancy. You know, a car takes you from home to work for decades. Well, if you take care of it correctly, like mine is 21 years old. But a car can also kill an innocent person. So who's sitting behind the steering wheel?
I don't like to drive.
You like to be driven to insanity.
Oh, I like to sit here and take etheric trips to different places. That's much more conducive to my way of traveling.
Yeah, no need to spend on gas.
That's right. Listen, I thank you so very much, my dear friend. You want to say goodnight, and we'll be on out of here. And probably next week it'll be a recording, but we never know. It might be live. Just stay tuned.
Yeah, we just might surprise you. Good night, everybody, and thank you for spending this Tuesday night with us. I hope we gave you something to think about. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Haggy Shack Radio and simulcast over Cosmic Reality Radio. Hello.